This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Hello. Today, I am joined by Professor Annette Ferguson from the University of Edinburgh, and she's just finished doing a talk here at the Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. So, welcome, Annette.
Hello.
So, to begin, I would like to just ask you, generally, what is the sort of the structure of a galaxy that you study? So your main area is...
Right. So I'm interested in studying galaxies that are like our Milky Way. And that's a class of galaxy. It's one of the two kinds of galaxies we see in the universe, is spiral galaxies. And the structure of spiral galaxies, it's a little bit like a... There's a flattened component, a disk. It's a bit like a saucer plate. And in the Milky Way, that's where our sun resides. It resides in the disk component of our galaxy, about halfway out between the center and the edge. And the other components of spiral galaxies are a central bulge. That's a kind of round component. In our galaxy, the bulge is full of old stars. And we're also surrounded by a stellar halo, which is also a sort of spheroidal component, but much more extended and diffuse than the bulge, and it envelops both the disk and the bulge.
Okay, so is this the sort of structure that you'd expect from all spiral galaxies?
It is. We have pretty well-developed ideas now of how spiral galaxies come into existence. And indeed, we have models that predict the existence of these different structural components in the spiral galaxy. We believe that they all formed, the different components that you see in a spiral galaxy, we believe they formed in different ways on different timescales. And one of the things that I'm working on is trying to test these theories with observations of stars and nearby galaxies, including our own.
In your talk, you were talking a lot about accretion, also other processes, but accretion seemed to be the primary theme. So what is accretion? What is an accretion on a galaxy?
So one of the main ideas behind modern galaxy formation theories is that galaxies grow by devouring smaller galaxies. And this happens when small galaxies fall within the gravitational potential well, so the gravitational influence of a bigger galaxy. And at that point, they basically get subsumed into the bigger galaxy, and their stars get torn out by the tidal forces that they experience as they orbit around the bigger galaxy. And those stars then become part of the stellar halo of the big galaxy. So this idea is something we would really like to be able to test with observations, and there's a number of ways we can go about doing it. The easiest way is perhaps to look for giant streams of stars in the halos of galaxies that would signify the remnants, the ghosts of galaxies that once were, that have now been devoured.
So were there originally lots of these dwarf galaxies, smaller galaxies around larger galaxies? Or was it just lots of little galaxies?
That's a good question. So initially, we believe that the first galaxies that formed in the universe at high redshift were small galaxies. And then these small galaxies merged together and grew into significantly larger systems over time. And we believe that's probably how our Milky Way arose. It started off quite small, and it's grown bigger over time. Current models predict that our galaxy should have several thousands of small galaxies, either today or in once originally had maybe several thousands of small galaxies orbiting around it. So there should be plenty of signatures of these accretion and tidal disruption processes if we can find them in the halo.
So most of these aren't around anymore? Or were you saying that there are thousands still currently that we maybe can't see? Or
yeah, this is a very big puzzle that a lot of astronomers are working on right now. The prediction is that there should be several thousands of them even right now. And as current knowledge of the Milky Way, we know that there are maybe about 20. So there's a gross discrepancy between what theory tells us there should be and what we can actually see. There are various ideas being proposed to explain this discrepancy. Some of them may have been devoured. Some of them may be completely dark. They may be galaxies that only have dark matter and they don't actually have any stars associated with them. That would require some fairly special conditions, but it can't be excluded right now by observations.
But these galaxies, these small galaxies, they They may only contain a few stars, for example, yeah. So that's why we can't see them.
They might be very low luminosity or very faint, and so they're very hard to find when they're so faint. But one way that we might hope to find them is through their dark matter. So galaxies are composed both of stars and gas, and they also have dark matter halos. And so for the systems that maybe lack many stars, they'll at least have dark matter, so we can possibly look for their influence in that way.
So that would be, for example, looking for streams of stars that appear to be going to nowhere. The gravitational effects, I suppose.
Yeah, it would be mostly looking for gravitational effects due to these dark matter halos. So we would be looking for signatures that there was some satellite galaxy that was causing a gravitational influence on a nearby object, but that we couldn't actually see any stars there. So these would be invisible galaxies in starlight, but if we had dark matter glasses on, we might see them.
Well, that could take some time. What does accretion tell us about a galaxy's history?
Well, if the theory is right, that accretion has been an important process in galaxies growing, then what we would like to know is how many stars in our galaxy were accreted. So how many of them formed in other galaxies and were brought into our galaxy? Is that most of the stars? Is it only a tiny fraction of the stars? We'd like to know what kind of stars come into our galaxy through accretion. Is it the oldest stars? Is it the most metal deficient stars? So we would like to understand how this process of accretion has actually helped to build up the stellar component of our galaxy over time. We would like to know whether accretion has been important in the formation of the diffuse stellar halo that surrounds the Milky Way, or whether it's been important in the formation of the central bulge, or even in the disk. So at the moment, we don't have good constraints on how important accretion has been for each of these different stellar components.
So would you say we don't really know that well which stars are native to the Milky Way, for example?
Yeah, there's a lot of work going into trying to figure that out. The Gaia satellite that was launched late last year, it's surveying the sky, it's measuring very detailed positions and distances for about a billion stars in the Milky Way, and we hope that by analysing the data that Gaia is going to provide, we will be able to start to put limits on the number of stars that have come into our galaxy in stellar streams or through the accretion process, and distinguish them from the ones that were formed natively in our galaxy.
Also in your talk, you mentioned a few other processes. So there was also feedback. Is that something that you work on?
I don't actually work on feedback myself. Many mm-hmm. people do.
Yeah.
It's a key process in astrophysics, and we believe it's really important for regulating the physics of galaxy formation. The idea behind feedback is that when stars form, especially massive stars, so stars maybe at least 10 times as massive as the Sun, when they form and they start shining through fusing hydrogen in their cores, they pump out lots of high-energy photons, and those photons influence the surrounding gas. So they excite the gas, they heat it, they send shock waves through the gas, and then at the end of their lives, they explode as supernovae, which also releases huge amounts of energy into the surrounding gas. When you perturb the gas that's around stars, you can either encourage it to form more stars, or you can inhibit it from forming more stars. So understanding how the feedback process works and what the net effect is on the gas, which is the material from which subsequent generations of stars will form, is really key.
So you're looking for evidence for both feedback and accretion in what you said was 1,800 galaxies. Is that correct?
One of the studies we've conducted is to look at a sample of 1,800 galaxies, and we've been examining them to see whether we see stellar streams in this sample and how frequently we see that. And stellar streams are a signature of this accretion process. Stellar streams indicate that some dwarf galaxy has been devoured by the massive galaxy, the massive host galaxy. So we've been looking to see if we can quantify how often that process happens.
You also showed a picture of M31, which is the Andromeda galaxy. And that was pretty spectacular, the streams you could see going between, so M33, which is another nearby galaxy. So you had a large role in working on that, was that?
Yeah, we've conducted, it's actually taken us about a decade to do a survey of the Andromeda galaxy, so also known as M31, and the Triangulum galaxy, which is M33. On the sky, those galaxies are separated by about 15 times the size of the full moon. We've been using a telescope in Hawaii to map out this complete area and analyze the stellar distribution in between the two galaxies. It's required about 400 hours of observing time over about 5 years, so it's been a ginormous effort. And there's a team of about 10 of us have been working on this, and we're scattered all over the world. It's led by a Canadian scientist. And so the result, as you say, is we've found evidence for a lot of faint stellar stream material in between the two galaxies, which suggests there's been quite a lot of accretions in the past. And in fact, we think the two galaxies, Triangulum and Andromeda, have interacted with each other about 3 billion years ago as well.
So the amount of detail that you can see, M31 image, is vastly superior to what you could see in the 1800 individual galaxies. For you to learn what you want to learn about these, the formation and history of these galaxies, are you going to need 400 hours on every single one of these other galaxies or more because they're further away?
That's what we would love. That would be ideal. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem realistic. It's been such a large effort to get the telescope time to map out the region around the Andromeda galaxy. It's impossible to believe we would get that much time to map out 1800 galaxies. But there are a number of new telescopes and new facilities that are coming in the not too distant future that we think could help to make good progress here. One of them is the Euclid satellite. It's an ESA satellite that will be launched in 2019, and it's a space telescope, and it will survey a lot of the sky, and the data from Euclid will allow us to look in detail at the faint structure of a good number of nearby galaxies. Slightly further on the horizon is the LSST, which is a large 8-meter telescope that the UK are currently bidding to become a member of, and that will survey the sky many, many times over the course of its 10-year duration.
What sort of telescope is Euclid? Is it optical? Is that?
It's a telescope that has both an optical and a near-infrared capability.
What's the benefits of Euclid? Is it just because it's serving such a...
Euclid is actually, it's been designed for another scientific purpose. It's been designed to study dark energy and the accelerating universe. But there are lots of other science that astronomers are going to be able to do with the data that Euclid provides. One of those other science areas that Euclid will be particularly good for is both studying the stars in our Milky Way galaxy's halo, as well as stars in the halos of other nearby galaxies.
Okay, so that's the future, essentially, of your work?
So we have a number of really exciting things. Gaia, as I mentioned before, is going to deliver fantastic data on the Milky Way. Euclid and LSST will deliver fantastic data on quite a number of other nearby galaxies, allow us to survey them, to look at them at extremely faint surface brightness limits and look for signatures of these tidal disruption events.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.